So how is the merging of gaming and storytelling changing the dynamics of audience engagement and community involvement?
That puts you inside
and
conversations
what
with the most deeply passionate,
forms of
intensely
like
dedicated,
TV shows and movies?
Yes, the most thoughtful people in our industry. So sit back and stay tuned. They may just change the way you think.
Hello, I'm Vicki Lins, President and CEO of CTAM, a marketing organization in the media entertainment technology industry. And today I am speaking with Colin Brady, Chief Creative Officer from AMGI Animation Studios. And although you may not have heard of AMGI, you certainly may have heard of Colin and or definitely have heard of some of the work that Colin's been behind. Well-known hits including Toy Story 1 and 2, A Bug's Life, Spider-Man, Men in Black 2, Lemony Snicket's A Series of Unfortunate Events. And I could go on and on, but I won't because I really want to get right to the conversation. So Colin, welcome. We're really excited to be talking to you today.
Great. Thank you very much. It's a real honor to be here.
I am not quite sure where to start because there are so many interesting angles to your life, your career, your talent. But I think I'll start with your family because just when we were chatting a little bit, you said you had 7 kids, 6 daughters. And that's that's wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, and I still, you know, every now and then it still catches me how insane that is, but it's been really beautiful that I'm like surrounded by these beautiful, loving girls that keep my life really grounded and just full of joy and wonder.
Well, I usually don't start by talking to people about their families, but you made an interesting comment that sort of keeps you childlike and really helps with your perspective. So talk to us a little bit about that, because being in the animation space, I would imagine that that's especially important.
I mean, we tend to focus on really specific moments, everyday moments that are magical, right? Or that we usually as adults, you forget how magical everything is. It's really helped me to kind of become a child again through their eyes and to view the world as magic.
You are a very interesting mix of creative and technology skill sets and talents. Talk to us a little bit about how that came together in a career for you and how it's played out in the course of your career.
Probably the best way to understand what I do is as a kid, I was a Star Wars kid. 7 years old, saw Star Wars, changed my life. My dad always said I came out of the theater a different person. I think it was the following summer, they had a making of behind the scenes, and they showed how they did this stop motion animation and how they animated the spaceships. And I asked my dad, hey, can we do that with our Super 8 camera? And my dad's like, I think so. I've just never tried it. And then I made some clay animated movies, I think when I was like 8, and fell in love. I was immediately hooked. And I think that started my whole journey of like art and science. It was art is the thing that communicates to the world. And so the Star Wars movies in particular really opened my eyes to a brand that communicates across cultures.
Let's back up just a bit because I sort of jumped into the heart of the matter, but I would like our listeners to understand AMGI, why you launched this company and what the company is all about. So could you give us a little bit of an overview of the animation studios and what you're all about there?
So as one of the first animators at Pixar on the Toy Story movies, I got a taste of being there before they exploded. And I was always the guy to work very closely, both with the animation department as a lead animator on Buzz Lightyear and Mr. Potato Head and all these characters. Jessie the Cowgirl was very near and dear to my heart, but I was always very good talking with the technical people. I was a good kind of bridge. Worked for George Lucas for many years, fell in love with motion capture and visual effects. And now, 30 years after the Toy Story movies, we founded AMGI Studios in 2019. And we said, let's reinvent how animation's done. Let's take the best artists we know, the best Pixar, DreamWorks, Disney artists, mix it with the most cutting-edge technology of today, which is real-time rendering using gaming technology. So we said, let's revolutionize how animation is done, better, faster, cheaper. You know, it allows, you know, instead of these $350 million animation productions, can we make that for a fraction of the cost? So when I said, let's bring gaming technology, and I'm not much of a gamer, I'll admit, but let's take the real-time rendering, specifically of the epic Unreal Engine. Unreal's behind Fortnite. It's also behind all the backgrounds for the TV show The Mandalorian. Real-time photoreal rendering. And so when we said, let's do this, we don't need a render farm. We just need good machines. Even my close friend said, well, it's not quite ready yet. No one's doing Pixar Disney style with computer, with gaming technology, because games are meant for soldiers and robots, zombies, things with, you know, very dead faces, and they don't do faces well. I said, well, that's great news. And we're going to be the first to do faces well. And so we're putting all the Pixar tricks we figured out 30 years ago, how to keep the eyes focused, the squash and stretch of the faces, the asymmetry of faces, strong body language. We're putting all that creativity now using real-time rendering of gaming technology. So that's the revolution that we have at AMGI Studios. And that's led to, ironically, developed a lot of TV show ideas, film ideas, many of which we were in talks with Apple and Netflix. COVID then hit. And so kind of as a means of survival, some of our investors said, well, can you make this into an app? You know, you guys are using gaming technology. And so we made an app called IMI, highest quality animation app in the world. And then when the AI revolution hit last year, 2022, we said, what if we plug this real-time gaming Pixar style into AI? So now we are the leaders in AI chatbot technology. We have the highest quality, most expressive animated chatbots in the world. And I'm not saying that as a brag. I can very humbly say that's just the reality.
There is so much in there to unpack, and I have 100 questions, and I'm really not sure which direction to go in. But you mentioned the pandemic and sort of breaking the momentum of certain project and certainly of the industry rhythm. And then, of course, we've been hit with a series of strikes in recent years, all of which are really helping to sort of reshape the immediate future of the industry. And so sure. From your perspective, what does that look like? Because you just shared some remarkable statistics about cost savings, time savings, efficiencies, impact. That seems to me like you've got a lot of answers to some current problems that the industry's facing.
I think so, and I hope so, because this technology would be useless unless it's for the masses. The goal is to improve everyday life of the average person. I always say the best director in the world right now might be some teenage girl sitting in a small town in Iowa, and she just doesn't have the opportunity or the connections or the technology or the money at her disposal to make these movies. And so we're trying to make these things less expensive, because I'm a very big believer that kind of a grassroots community-driven storytelling. Story is the software to humans' DNA hardware. It's like storytelling is, that's what humans are. I mean, that's what makes us successful. We have this knowledge of story, which passes through generations. It can scale up infinitely. It gives us momentum to, you know, fight wars and pursue our dreams. Stories are everything. And so these tools that we're creating are ultimately just at the service of the average person with a good idea, so that we're not just a slave to the five studios in Hollywood that want to tell us what they think we need to believe. It's funny, I didn't even mention the thing that we're most known for right now, which is My Pet Hooligan. My Pet Hooligan is a brand we came up with in the pandemic, started as an NFT, kind of on a whim, was incredibly successful. And then as that whole crypto market crashed and NFTs crashed, I think we were kind of like the only person left standing, because we were actually built on something real, which was like, wow, you can actually use your character to create social media memes. You can use it to create stories. We built a video game, which was just launched last week through Epic and Amazon Gaming. So Amazon Prime Gaming is now promoting our game, which can scale up to millions of people. It's like Fortnite meets Disney. And so My Pet Hooligan is exactly that kind of thing. It's a community-driven brand. That's, I think, the most animated game out there, because we use a lot of all the Disney tricks that are put into the game. Very soon, we're going to plug our AI into it. People can use this more as a social media hangout. It's all about that every person matters. They have unique identities. Every single piece of graffiti in the game on the wall is 100% created by the community. So this community also, it has a very wide appeal, but it really is just kind of the candy on the doorsteps to attract people to an ecosystem that's kind of like a new version of Disneyland. It's a social hangout area where people can do stand-up comedy, karaoke, It's a farmer's market of sorts where ultimately people will be able to create their own wearable costumes, skins, and sell them, resell them. It's a little mini revolution we're trying to create.
Why do you think the larger, more established studios are so resistant to adopting this more fluid and accessible new technology wave?
I mean, primarily, they're too big. I mean, I'm not going to say the name, but there was a very large studio we once demoed our technology to about. And the studio, you know, a big Zoom call, looking at our stuff, they're saying, this is amazing. Why aren't we doing this? And I said, well, I don't want to offend you, but I think it's because you're too big. So it takes studios like ours to be small and nimble that we can literally say on a Monday morning, we could say, hey, everybody, hold up. We got it. We have a job due by Friday. And we found a new plugin for the software or this new system to do cloth simulation or something crazy. And we're going to go in this direction this week. Bam, we can turn on a dime and do it. Large studios, it's a 6-month process to change over. So I think they just can't do it. It's a large ship, right? It takes too long to change the direction of a barge. And we're more of like a little motorboat kind of zigzagging down the river.
So are you viewed as a competitor and a threat within the ecosystem, or are you viewed as a partner and an ally? And if so, what kinds of opportunities are out there on that front?
I think we're mostly just kind of not on their radar. Or if we are, I mean, literally, we were saying we want to revolutionize the industry using real-time rendering, using the Unreal Engine. Even a couple of years ago, people were like, what do we do with this? You know, we have a whole studio that doesn't use this. Now we've been approached by studios saying, hey, we're only interested in using the Unreal Engine to make an animated feature film. And can you be our partners? Well, now we've kind of morphed into an animation technology studio. And it really is the animation technology that we're talking with several partners about licensing our technology. We have about 6 pending patents right now on our technology. And so I tell people very simply, in a couple of years, if you see an animated character at Starbucks drive-through window taking your order, it's a very good chance that will be our technology.
What are the key trends and opportunities you see in leveraging gaming or your other IP for TV and movies? You've mentioned how one feeds the other and how it all starts to come together. What does that look like from your perspective?
Yeah, well, I think it's all about building a brand. Ironically, it's almost an easier path is to first make the thing as a video game and then to turn it into a feature film. Angry Birds did this, right? Angry Birds is a very simple app that was probably made for a couple $100,000, catapulting these little two-dimensional silly birds through obstacles. Well, that thing then led to a whole brand, probably $1 billion-plus brand, feature films and so on. Our My Pet Hooligan game is exactly, it's almost easier, at least in our case, to get an idea out there as a video game first. They like playing video games, Roblox, Minecraft, Fortnite, and they like to watch YouTube videos of people playing video games. It's crazy. Most people in our generation don't get it. That is their generation. They're more excited by video games than they are about what new movie's coming out or what's on Netflix. It's an idea. So even though the video game is not linear storytelling, it doesn't have a typical 3-act structure, they do represent a story. We're in the character icon business. These characters, like My Pet Hooligan characters, so the story itself, we can make a dozen of different stories that embody that spirit. Some, you know, we have, even not right now, we're creating a brand, we're creating worldwide brands. And now we're in the business to help other people's brands, turning brands into entertainment.
So you're really seeing and helping to drive a shift from a traditional Hollywood entertainment model more towards creating a brand that transcends individual projects. How do you see that impacting the industry's dynamics and potential for long-term success?
I think that's really what's lacking with the current entertainment model. Hollywood for 100 years has been a one-way street. And I don't think storytelling is a one-way street. Hey, we'd love to work on TV shows and films, but like with the current model, maybe you make 20% profit and then you're done. But if you make a brand, now the story kind of has caught fire and it's a brand bigger than you. These worlds are merging 100%. And I think for the better, while we all grew up with Hollywood movies in the last 100 years that were these packaged 2-hour stories that are told, I actually think true storytelling is a communal experience. And so I think gaming, you're not just sitting there just simply as a consumer saying, open up my brain, pour in your entertainment. Gaming, I think, offers an opportunity for Well, Discord is a perfect example. Discord, it's a social app that mostly was started by gamers so they could have conversations as they're gaming. And so the Discord community is really what launched the success of My Pet Hooligan NFT. We have like 100,000 people now that follow us on Twitter. And at any time, there's 30,000, 40,000 people on our Discord channel. And they are the most active and supportive community.
So how is the merging of gaming and storytelling changing the dynamics of audience engagement and community involvement? And what implications does this have for traditional forms of entertainment like TV shows and movies?
So I don't think gaming is going to like save the planet, but I think in some ways it might be a more truer form of storytelling. And so I think for the Netflixes of the worlds to survive and so on, to adapt to the fact that the community is not a monolithic, powerless entity, but they are a thriving, changing, and wanting to interact. So that's why our community is so engaged to create beautiful graffiti in every single wall of our video game. It seems like a natural extension. Let's say if this game was now turned into a TV series, which it might be, for that person to be able to look at the TV show and say, that's my graffiti on the wall behind them, or that's my character. They use my character, my likeness, or my character's likeness as a character in the game. I mean, we actually literally are writing the community into the skits that we do. So it's not just, it's a crazy act of engagement. It's not just like saying, oh, I like watching Curb Your Enthusiasm, or I like watching Stranger Things. It's like, no, I'm part of this. I'm actually affecting the direction of this show.
What innovative approaches do you think networks should consider in order to enhance the communal experience of watching content?
People like to just watch a movie together. We might have two people sitting two screens apart with the same movie being played on their screen off to the side. It's like just like a little fire burning in the corner of your screen or on another screen, but they're doing it together. And I think there is, especially through COVID, I think there's this human need to have a sense of communal experience. So there's that. So I do think that coming up with a way that fans interact, contests, and so that experience is what's lacking a lot. And I'm excited that this younger generation, they're now getting older. They're becoming decision makers. You would have never thought, can a video game be made into a movie? That's ridiculous. And now you have like the Mario Brothers movie. It's the most successful, you know, animated movie ever, something like that, the best opening. And they're seeing, oh, wait a second. Yeah, this is a generation that's now grown up on video games. And they identify with the stories. And so the video games are working. Well, that's at least 5 or 10 times more profitable than film. But going back to your question of, yes, I think they're going to have to pivot. I think there's going to be kind of a hybrid blend of, you want to know who the audience is as you're watching the entertainment. So if they can bring that kind of sense of fan interaction, I think that would be a real win-win community. And this is, I think it's communal. So that's my North Star.
At the end of the day, it has to be monetized somehow to make sense. What does that model look like for you in the work that you're creating?
So we have two clear monetization paths. We have a B2B. So if you have a character, if you represent a large brand that needs to be on someone's website, interacting directly with the consumer, ours is the best solution to do that. And the unique niche that we found is these are not deep fakes. One large corporation we were working with said, you're not doing deep fakes, are you? We said, no, it's the opposite. We might be the only ones that are firmly in the Disney lane, the quote unquote Disney lane, where we believe people are more free to express themselves as a cartoon character. And they also, there's a level of trust. We're maybe 2 months away from launching this plan that I'm talking about, a service that anyone could go to a website, talk to the character a little bit for free by minutes or hours of a subscription model. Now, our service is live talking animated characters. So we feel that fits nicely into the spectrum of AI software as a service products that no one else is doing anything close to. We're making AI family friendly. We're taking the creepiness off of it. Everyone thinks of AI as the thing that's going to start World War III or enslave the human race. And I'm probably more optimistic than most about that.
You've been a step ahead of a lot of people working in your space in terms of embracing AI. And you have a philosophy that it's a tool and an opportunity and not a threat. So talk a little bit more about how you're successfully using it today, and then predict for us, where do you see it heading next within this creative sphere where up until now, it really has been viewed as more of a threat than an opportunity?
I heard a quote that I'm going to repeat, but it was more or less along the lines of, look, this thing is not going to be the savior of humanity, nor is it going to be the destroyer of humanity. It is just another tool like the printing press or like the camera or photography or the invention of flight. It's very much like that, which all of those technologies absolutely mean nothing without a human driving it. I'm a firm believer that AI does not have consciousness. I'm a firm believer it never will have consciousness. Bold statement. But I think there's something so special about humans because we're composite of mind and body, and we're limited to time and space that gives us a very unique thing that AI just doesn't have. So AI by itself, it's kind of like math. It doesn't have a will. It doesn't have an intention behind it. There are some people when you give them, you're like, hey, look, check out this new AI program. Check out Midjourney. You can make anything you want. There are a lot of people that just stare blankly like a deer in the headlights. Like, what do I do? What do I make? What do I want to make? And that's probably true for most people. So I see this as just a tool to make us more efficient. So many people love to frame it in the area of this is going to take jobs. And I also don't believe that. Like, for example, you know, people ask me, like, is this going to replace your animators? Well, I could tell you it hasn't replaced a single animator, but it allows us to now be 10 times more productive. And it's not like we were sitting on a pile of money that we were going to hire 10 times the animators. And we decided, let's not hire them. Let's use AI. That's not how these things work at all. I think it's just an average tool to just make things a lot more efficient, to magnify the human spirit. It's a magnifier that magnifies your own unique abilities and makes each person way more powerful, way more productive.
I do think, to your earlier point about generational perspectives, the younger generation is wildly embracing it as an opportunity and a tool, isn't threatened by it, is opening portals to what else can be done with it in really exciting ways. I think there's something to be said for unleashing the power of human creativity through the funnel of new technologies.
Yeah, and that's true. But, you know, hopefully, like any tool, like if you're just wildly flailing it about, it's dangerous. I think that kind of going back to our first part of the conversation, increasing someone's sense of wonder in the world. And so I think it's instilling a sense of wonder. What I find exciting is that young people are fearless. I mean, in terms of learning technology and just not worried to press buttons. They're never worried about pressing the wrong button when figuring things out. So I think there's a fearlessness. The younger generation also embraces digital currency. It's completely natural for my son to say, hey, Dad, for my birthday, can I have whatever, $10? Can you buy me $10 worth of V-Bucks in Fortnite? And so their culture has completely embraced digital currency, which I think is kind of a good thing. They're open to the abstraction of money. They're open to trading digital money for services. I'm very, very optimistic. And I think AI is a wonderful, miraculous tool, but it still is a tool nonetheless.
What emerging technologies should we be watching out for?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm so, you know, my head is so focused on this AI stuff, both for body and face tracking. And so I'm kind of in the animation world, so to speak. So, I mean, very specifically in our company, I've been obsessed. One of these patents that we just got is breaking down animation to a fundamental level. I'm trying to create the periodic table of elements version of animation movement. And so the goal, once again, is to create Pixar quality movies. I really believe it's not impossible in my lifetime, and maybe in 10 years, to create a Pixar quality movie for 1/100th of the cost. And how do we do that? Right now, everyone else is approaching automated animation or AI animation. There's a lot of people trying. It's all pretty creepy. You either get stuff that looks like androids kind of bumping into each other in a crowd, or you get this monstrous looking AI created animation that kind of is nightmarish. It's kind of off-putting. So personally, I'm focusing on the fundamental, like Pixar qualities.
I read somewhere that you're really known for your never stop growing attitude. So what's next? What's the growth opportunity ahead? What are you setting your sights on these days?
I want to turn people from being consumers into creators, producers of something. I think that would be a good chapter after this one.
Well, that would certainly be an amazing chapter, but the preceding chapters you've already written are equally impressive and impactful. And it has been a real pleasure talking to you today. And I can speak for our listeners when I say we're really looking forward to seeing whatever it is you do next.
Well, no, thank you. And once again, it's an honor just to talk.
Hope you found this Thinking Out Loud conversation interesting and perhaps even thought-provoking. There are more on the way. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and leave a review.